Welcome to Cloud Native Startup. I'm Emily Omir, your host. Today, I am recording on site at KubeCon in Valencia, and I'm chatting today with Jan Leger, and he is the CEO and co-founder of Koyeb.
That's correct. Thank you so much for having me, Emily, today.
Of course. So let's just start with having you introduce yourself. Could you introduce yourself and the company?
Yeah, so I'm Jan, one of the co-founder of Koyeb. We are basically a startup building a completely serverless platform. We let people deploy basically containers and cloud native application out and actually native code. And in which case we take care of the whole continuous deployment process. And I've actually been in this space for a little while. I spent the last 10 years building cloud service providers. Initially, I joined a company called Outscale in France, who was doing in 2011, a cloud service provider comparable to AWS for France, because there weren't even there at the time. And we continued with Scaleway during 6 years, which is the second largest cloud service provider in France. It's actually the third one in Europe. And so we've been doing that with my two actual co-founders inside of a bigger company. And we then jumped to working on Koyeb to provide a new experience for developers to abstract completely infrastructure for them.
And so what was the moment when you decided that you wanted to leave this other company, the larger company, and start your own?
So we entered a large growth phase in 2018 at Scaleway. So we hired about 150 people in 4 months, I think, when the company basically doubled in size. And I think we just had an opportunity where, for different reasons, with my two co-founders, they left earlier, I left a little bit later, and we jumped on the opportunity to build something new from scratch and outside of a big corporation, I would say, because Scaleway is part of a traded company, so you don't have the same flexibility, I would say, and the same capacities when you're in this kind of setup.
And why this? What was it about this particular idea that sort of drew you?
We actually didn't really start with it, but we've always been in this space. So the space was a little bit a no-brainer for us in the sense that we love this cloud infrastructure space and building cloud service providers. We started with a slightly different thesis, which was about helping people to use multiple cloud service providers. Mm-hmm. And we circled back to what we actually love to do is helping developers deploy applications in the cloud. So that's really the core of what we are doing today.
And why did you choose to base it on serverless?
We believe there is a significant change in the market happening. Technologies are changing every 5 years, I would say. Standards are changing and evolving. We've seen the shift from data centers to IIS and to people are completely looking to Kubernetes-based deployments. And we are a huge believer that the next kind of application will be deployed without having to think about this lower level technologies. That you won't have to think about Kubernetes, and that's what we are trying to bring. We try to bring you something where you can deploy the way you know. Where you don't have to learn anything specific about the platform, so you can deploy containers or you just push a GitHub repository and we will take care of deploying your application. Yeah, and we completely abstract this server and cluster notions. That's really the core of our business. We want developers to be able to enjoy all this experience.
It's interesting. I also thought of asking, like, why are you even here? Because when I think of serverless, I think of almost like an opposition to Kubernetes and containers.
Yeah, I think the subject today of the conference is KubeCon on cloud, NativeCon. Maybe they are ready for this shift, actually. I think it's, I read it in one of the Linux Foundation reports where they are basically saying that Kubernetes is going to go down and be abstracted, like the kernel Linux, mm-hmm. the Linux kernel was previously. So if they are betting, it's going to disappear. I think there's probably a shift going on. So, I mean, we're not saying it's going to completely disappear, but just that it's going to be operated by less people. Companies maybe like us, even if we don't operate on top of Kubernetes, but it's people who are really specialized in providing higher level services who will continue using maybe some Kubernetes if they have an interest for this, but most of the company will end up on higher level technologies.
Which ultimately is, I mean, a good thing, because working on Kubernetes doesn't like directly provide value for your customers.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the core of our business. It's about making sure that you don't have to know those technologies which are not specific to your business, and that you don't need to hire DevOps people who will work on this specifically.
So you touched on something a little earlier that I think is interesting, and I don't ask it often enough. What do you actually think cloud native means? Like, if this were to just become, you know, forget about KubeCon, but cloud native con, what does that mean? Like, what would we cover?
Yeah, actually, it's funny because I don't know how long it has been called also Cloud Native Con, because I think originally it was only KubeCon, so maybe they are preparing for the shift. But Cloud Native Con is, I think, the real subject here. It's about, at some point, there was a question whether people would shift to the cloud. It's not anymore. I mean, for a few years, it's just like the standards. And we are starting from that. Like, we're starting from the fact that 90% of organizations are deploying in the cloud. So the subject here is probably like a little bit, if it's cloud native con, how do you speak about things which are standard about between cloud service providers and not high level technology which are specific to a cloud service provider? I think that's one of the challenge which is ahead of us. That's why we had the question of whether we would let people deploy functions or containers or directly GitHub repository, and we started originally with functions, but we kind of saw that there was no standardization, and that if we do that, you have to push a standard, and that's what large players can do, and they try to get you in their platform, and then you cannot move. And so we went with a direction where it's pretty standard with containers, and you can deploy a GitHub repository directly and any source code. So, and you don't have to adapt anything specific to our platform. And I think that's one of the key challenge for at least emerging players who have, say, we don't have the footprint of AWS, Azure, or GCP, who can impose their standards, and which is not necessarily good for other people. Mm-hmm.
I haven't actually spoken with a lot of people about, you know, other cloud providers that aren't AWS and Google. I'm actually curious, like, what are the main reasons that customers choose to go with a non-AWS or Google, assuming they're not in China?
I think the key reason is our play and the reason people join us is for simplicity, just because, and it's really the core of our value proposition. It's about getting you to deploy without having to understand like 10 different products. So Basically the technology we provide integrates several different products you would have to assemble yourself on other cloud service providers. So for instance, we integrate advanced networking capabilities. We integrate also an edge network completely built in. And if you deploy on another cloud service provider, it's something you can do, but you need to really assemble technologies and you need to understand. So we are abstracting everything you'd expect from our modern platform. So if you deploy a service, it's going to be natively auto-scaling. We're going to adapt a number of containers which are running automatically for you. It's going to have native edge capabilities and advanced networking. And that's where we rely on an open source technology called Kuma. To provide all these transparent things, where if you try to do this on another cloud service provider, you tend to have to really understand networking and to add a VPC or add a dedicated service for mesh network, and you just need to think about it. And when you deploy on Koyeb, you can deploy this microservices, and you have this communication which is completely transparent for the end user.
And tell me a little bit more about your relationship with Kuma.
Yeah, so it's in early 2021 when we started building this platform. We had to find a technology for the networking part, and we decided to provide natively a service mesh, which is not completely new, but it's still, like, I would say, in the early phases in terms of adoption. And we wanted to have that as a standard on the platform. So all the Koya platform is built on top of open source technologies, and we are actually relying on Bernal servers, and we have our own technology to orchestrate all the workloads. But we needed a component to provide this transparent networking, and that's where we basically found Kuma, who is made by Kong, for this service mesh orchestration. So it's relying on Envoy behind the scene, but they help us basically, I mean, the technology help us really provision automatically and transparently for the end users all these components. Yeah, so, I mean, it's a key technology because it's what provides native encryption between your different microservices, and it also provides, like, load balancing and advanced capabilities on this side. So we're happy with, we actually didn't have I mean, there is not a lot of mature technologies for our specific use case, which implies also multi-tenancy at a specific scale, because we run multiple customers on one single machine. Yeah, and so Kuma was still, I think, in the early days when we started. It wasn't like, it didn't reach Gia. And yeah, we've been working with teams there. They actually hired one of our engineers. But it's really helpful. I mean, and I think we are pushing a little bit some interesting use case to them also.
And does Koyup have any open source projects that you maintain?
We have a small, tiny project, but which is called K Reconciler, I think. But we are not big on new projects yet, because we are not good at maintaining them. And if you just push a repository and nobody is taking care of it, but nothing is happening. So we're mainly contributing back to projects we use. We are upstreaming the changes we made to Kuma, for instance, and we are trying to work with them to make sure that we are not drifting specifically, because we are pushing, like, we have a lot of performance subjects where it's not specifically designed to have so many different meshes, because we have, so each customer on the Koya platform has an individual service mesh, and that's really the multi-tenancy part, and we have like thousands of that, and it's not specifically designed for having so many meshes, so we're working with them to improve the performances on the site specifically.
I think it's really great, actually, that you're self-aware enough to know that it would be a challenge to maintain, like, put in all the, like, serious effort to maintain a project. And so, you know, you're not sort of not doing what you know you can't do.
Yeah, I mean, so we want to do it at some point, but we so at the beginning, one of the questions was whether the Koyup service platform technology should be open source. Because it's a big trend, like, do it open source. But it wasn't in the spirit, not because we don't want it to be open source, but because we want to provide an experience which is completely managed. So as an end user, if you need to set up to deploy your open source project, like you have to do with Kubernetes, for instance, it completely defeats the purpose for us. So, and if we had to open source core IP of Koyup, it would basically require us to adapt to other use cases which are not our use cases, and it's animating a community is a lot of work. So, and if people contribute and you don't manage their contribution, that's not going to work. So, yeah.
I really like, actually, that you said, you know, you wanted an experience that was completely managed. There are some people that I talk to that think, like, all connotations around open source are positive. And I don't think that's true. And I think, like, specifically one assumption that people make about open source is that it's not going to be, you know, a seamless experience, or it's going to be challenging.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've seen in the recent few years kind of open source as a go-to-market, to be honest. I mean, we see a lot of companies starting this way and ending up providing a managed service. So that's a go-to-market, it seems, because they are not expecting to generate revenue from that. So directly, at least. So we could have done that, but it wasn't our play. But we are definitely hoping to contribute some key part of the project later on when it's when we can. We have this small thing. I know the people at AshiCorp looked at it, the reconciler part. I can't describe it properly, I think, but it basically helps you manage states in your on your platform.
Cool. And what do you think have been like your top two or three mistakes that you've made since starting Koyab that you're willing to share?
Maybe one of the challenge when you're building such a technology is communication. When you decide to communicate, because it's so you kind of have the feeling. On one side, the startup books tells you need to communicate early, but on the other side, you know that you don't have the technology yet. So, and the startup ecosystem is kind of communicating earlier than when the technology is working. So you need to be realistic between that you kind of need to do it because the market is this way. So I would say maybe one of the mistakes we made early on was to not communicate more quickly. So that's one of the things which we weren't really effective at the beginning. And I think the first positioning we had, because we changed our positioning at the end of 2020 into this full serverless platform, was probably something which we didn't completely live with in a way. So you really need to see yourself using the product. Otherwise, yeah, it's kind of not going to work, I think.
When you say like see yourself using the product, do you mean just like be able to empathize with what your customers are going to experience?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you need to be able to, I mean, it's hard for, not all companies can do it probably because some companies, people inside of the company are not users of the product. But we kind of, we have this thing where we want to, so we sell to people. And we could also be users. And it's way easier this way. I mean, when you know how to use the product and what you expect. So I think, yeah, that's a key thing, trying to build a product where you are a user and it's straightforward for you what's expected. And if you don't go this way, if you try to... otherwise, you need to be really good at to have early users which are really paving the way.
I think you're speaking to one of the advantages of being a technical founder, being able to have the technical background to really put yourself into the shoes of one of your users. So part of what I'm asking is like, what are the disadvantages of being a technical founder? But I'm also curious, like, how did you have to change or evolve or learn to go from being, you know, just a technical engineer sitting behind, you know, a terminal to, you know, running a business, running a company?
Yeah. So I think it touches back to what we were saying before about communication about marketing earlier. So, I mean, I've been in this management role and managing a business for a little while now, but I'm still like influenced by my education, probably, for sure. But the key challenge is to be able to, I think, communicate and sell on things which are not perfect, maybe in a way or not. Maybe it's also a personal bias, but on something which is not yet definitely working, communicate it early and don't. And one of the key things I'm trying to push inside of the company is trying to communicate on everything we do. It's maybe also cultural for us, but it's communicate about every single improvement you do inside of the company and don't wait to have a complete nice feature before you tell everybody. Because there is a lot of work, especially on completely managed serverless platform, where it's about reliability and making it scale, which is not a feature for the end user, because it's the end result for the end user is it just works. But if you don't tell people all around that you're progressing and that it's going forward, you're kind of missing part of the job of running a company and a business. So.
Yeah, what that makes me think is everyone talks about transparency. You know, nobody says like we don't value transparency. Everyone values transparency, but putting it into practice is actually, you know, actually walking the walk is pretty challenging.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a constant walk. It also depends on where the people worked previously and what was the culture before. But it's definitely not something which is built in the corporate environment. So. I mean, it goes from everything, like on Slack, for instance, on internal communication, like trying to push everyone to write on public channels, not because you want everything to be public, but because usually people don't write up because they are afraid there will be a backslash or something like that. And it's just like, but it's a habit. And if you don't do it, and if you don't push it early, it kind of get this frustration of siloing and all this kind of things. So yeah, transparency is definitely a hard thing to implement and that you need to be watching every day, I think.
I am just curious, do you have an all remote team or do you have an office?
So we have an office, but we are completely distributed. And actually we started during the pandemic. So, I mean, it's not anymore a question kind of because we had to go completely remotely at some point. So we don't have this legacy of having an office where we expect people to come. We have an office and we actually have, so we have co-working spaces, basically. We have one in Paris and one in Lyon in France. But we're not expecting people to come every day. We're just, they come whenever they want. And we're more trying to get to fight social isolation than anything else and to get the team together to think.
Yeah, I asked mainly because I think that's one of the challenges of remote working. The transparency can be even more challenging.
Yeah, I mean, you miss a lot of conversation, I would say. And every time we get together, I think it gets back a sense of purpose, which you can make Zoom calls, which are drinking calls or not, I mean...
Happy hours.
Yeah, happy hours, exactly, or whatever. However we call it, but it's not the same thing. So we try to organize offsites also to get everybody together. And I was actually impressed by the impact that it kind of has early on, especially on values and things like that, where we were kind of skeptical at the beginning that, I mean, we would be able to have an impact with that, but actually it has a lot of impact when people... just explaining what you think and why you wrote that on the website and that it's not just like some corporate thing is key early on.
Absolutely. So if you were to give someone else advice, you know, a technical founder, an engineer who's, you know, has an idea and wants to start a company, what advice would you give them?
One single advice. So, I mean, people come a lot to me talking about fundraising because it's one of the key thing actually of the business parts. But one single advice would be maybe on the investment side, it's probably like, because it's actually a subject where you early on don't necessarily expect to spend that much time. And when you, and that's one of the key difference when you are working as an independent company and when you are, so, I mean, some companies are bootstrapped, so that's good for them because they are not dependent on external investors, but you end up spending a lot of time trying to frame your vision. And selecting investors is a key thing. So if you decide to go this route, we are really lucky with our investors. But you need to be really careful about who you select, I think, because you will meet with them regularly and save. And actually, I mean, one of the key things which goes to this, which is not directly related to money, is finding good advisors, getting people outside of your company, outside of your, to advise you and to help you think. That's probably definitely the thing which is the most valuable to us.
Excellent. All right. Well, anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
Yeah, actually, one thing we didn't touch base on is we just announced a Koyeb public preview yesterday. It's a big day for us. So we already have 12,000 developers who joined the platform, and we during the private preview. And so we're kind of dealing with growth lately, and we just announced a public preview yesterday. So we're really excited about it and about getting even more people joining the community. So you should definitely sign up and try it. It's free, and you can actually get something deployed in less than 5 minutes. And it's really, you don't need to have any infrastructure knowledge. So, and the other thing is, of course, Emily, thank you so much for having me today. It's really a pleasure to be here in Valencia with you.
Excellent. Likewise. Thank you for joining me. Before we go, how can listeners connect with you or follow you?
Twitter. My handle is Jan. _EU, and otherwise LinkedIn would work, and of course through the Koyeb platform. So we have a Slack community where there is a lot of our users, so we are always responding there too. So that's one of the ways.
Excellent. Fabulous. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Cloud Native Startup. If you'd like to learn more about positioning, messaging, and go-to-market for open source and cloud native startups, head over to my blog, positioningopensource.com. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. I'm at Emily O'Meara, and you can feel free to reach out on Twitter or on my website and blog with questions or comments. If you enjoyed this episode, also please share and help more people discover this podcast. Thank you, and we hope to have you next week.